Welcome back, everybody. My name is Tub.
And I'm Jonesy.
And we watch movies.
Perfect.
How are you?
I'm good. Work is crazy busy right now. It's like never-ending projects coming in, so that's great. Film industry is doing awesome, finally, taking off.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, good for them. Good for us.
Good for them. Good for those guys.
Yeah.
More stuff for us to talk
it's
about.
The COVID stuff is like finally starting to peter out because of people getting vaccinated and they don't have to do as much testing anymore, which is saving a lot of producers with their budget. So it's been good. We'll be seeing a lot of new entertainment coming out here soon. And commercials.
Sweet. Oh, my favorite.
Bread and butter. Yeah.
I love commercials.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. It's really crazy, actually, to see how much work goes into just, like, your basic run-of-the-mill commercial.
That
it's
those like, things that irritate the shit out of you. And it's like, they put so much effort into it.
So much effort.
Just for me to go, fuck off. Yeah. Where's the goddamn skip button?
Yeah, exactly. And that one commercial is, like, 2 to 4 days that are like 12 to 14 hour days.
Like, it's probably, and I've worked on nothing harder than that in my life, or nothing that hard ever.
And you're like, this is bullshit. Like, right when it comes up.
God, fuck off.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really nuts. Especially to see like what they do to someone's house when you're like inside a house. Like, you see a commercial, you see someone standing in the kitchen, you don't really think anything of it. But when you watch them filming, like, they just fuck that house up the whole time they're in there.
It's not even their house. It's like when you go out to eat and you're eating and you have that epiphany and realization that, like, whatever spoon you're suckling on, like, 20 other people suckled on that spoon that day.
Yeah, dude. Like, and all of the crew members, they don't give a fuck. Like, they're smoking cigarettes in the front lawn. Like, they're just bumping into walls and shit. They don't live there.
Sorry, I just bumped into your wall and they left a giant, comically shaped body imprint. That actually happened at a party I went to when I was a young man.
Wait, you left the body imprint or someone else did?
No, the tall guy. There was a tall guy in our group. He was very tall. And he was also very big because he was very tall. And we all had a little bit to drink. I think he was drinking Hot Damn or whatever that horrible cinnamon liquor is.
Oh, Fireball?
Could be a Fireball or, one of those. Whatever the cheaper version of those is.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And he just bumped softly into this wall. And it fucked the wall up. Yep. And so what I did this week is not much. I played a little Mass Effect 2.
Sure.
But other than that, funny thing that I did that you called me out on that I didn't even know was when we were promoting our poll for the week for the next episode, it was down to The Lighthouse and The Hunt, and The Lighthouse won. And when I was doing our social media, only on Facebook, because that's where this would happen. It would not happen anywhere else.
Right.
I posted a picture of The Lighthouse, just the kind of normal picture that you'd see. Yeah, the movie poster. But I didn't notice in the middle of it, if you zoom in, and you can go to our Facebook at TJ Watch Movies and see it for yourself. We didn't take it down. But right in the middle, I just didn't notice there's like a little cherry on top of the lighthouse.
It's like a cherry emoji that someone perfectly placed. I thought you did it as a joke. I thought it was hilarious.
You know what's funny, too, is that is my style.
Yeah, it is. Like a very subtle.
I got out-tubbed by somebody.
By someone out there.
And I don't know who it is, but I stole their
art
movie poster. Put up there, so fuck me.
Yeah,
I guess credit to the guy who wants to be me.
Yeah, that was. Well, we should talk about how close this poll was too.
It was close.
We had to do a tiebreaker and everything.
If I didn't do a Twitter poll, I would have been boned.
We'd have been fucked
for my choice. I mean, we would have just done The Hunt, which would have been cool too.
Yeah,
we'll probably do it. We'll probably do it again some other time.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was real. I was shocked at how close it was. To be honest, I thought it was going to be The Lighthouse by a landslide.
I mean, I thought it would too, because it's such a weird-ass movie.
It's so good.
And it's just fun to talk about.
Yeah.
and it's way different than the other two movies we did.
Yeah.
And I thought it might have been closer to last week's episode until I watched The Lighthouse a couple more times again. And then I realized it's just like, it's its own fucking thing.
It is its own thing. Yeah, it is. Well, we should dig into it then.
Let's talk about it.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
The plot is basically two guys go to tend a lighthouse.
That's it.
That's basically it. Yeah. So that's as non-spoilery as you
can get. There's a four-week stint that the younger man is supposed to be serving as a second to the older man. So he's only supposed to be there for 4 weeks. Yeah, the wiki.
Four-week wiki.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, and then mayhem ensues.
Yep. And then, from there, like you were saying, you get kind of smacked in the face with the aspect ratio.
Yeah.
Or the movie being shot in true black and white and not being shot in color and then changed to black and white, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think what was really jarring, actually, there are a lot of similarities between this and Lose, to be honest. Just a lot of similar things. One of the things that bothered you about Lose was that there was no dialogue for the first 4 minutes.
Yes.
And in this movie, there was no dialogue for the first 7 minutes.
I can explain myself.
Your thoughts. Okay.
This movie isn't 70 minutes.
Right.
The other one is.
True.
So in this one, I go into it expecting it to be maybe a little longer feeling or a little more boring or monotonous. The other one at 70 minutes, you're just milking it. You're milking it to get a full motion picture.
Okay. Credit I see on what there. You mean.
We're like, it could have been just a little bit shorter, but other than that, yeah, it's basically the same thing. I'm a little bit of a hypocrite.
But, first of all, like we said, the black and white, the aspect ratio, those are things that just set it apart immediately that you're like, oh, this is different. But for me, one of the things that really stood out to me stylistically is the symmetrical shots. Throughout the whole movie, he does a lot of very symmetrical shots, like a bar right in the middle of the screen or the subject right in the middle of the screen. Like, everything is very symmetrical. It was really well done.
And I think, I think the aspect ratio, too, really helps with that, too, because it
truly.
It denies you the excess of focus of like extra stuff that you don't need to be focusing on. It really lets you focus on whoever the player is on the screen.
Well, even like, I mean, I'm kind of bouncing all the way around here, but like, even when there's like chaos happening, like there's at one point at the end, there's a bunch of stuff thrown everywhere, but the table is right in the center of the screen. Or, like, when they come up on the older guy sleeping and his book is on his chest. It's, like, what's it called? The middle of that book, the spine of the book is, like, right in the middle of the screen. It's very cool. It's a cool effect.
And that's something that I didn't even really pick up on that much.
Oh,
that
really?
Really goes to show you. I mean, I guess I did a little bit, especially where it's, like, really evident.
Yeah.
Like, I know the first scene where Thomas... We didn't really get into that yet, but
yeah, we will.
I'll say Thomas for young Thomas and then Tom for old Tom.
Yeah. My notes are YT and OT.
I called him young and old because that's what the script called him.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So that's what I went with. So young Thomas goes up to their sleeping area. And as he's walking up there, the other character, old Tom, is already pissing in a pot. Standing behind the pillar.
Yeah.
And it's directly, like you said, just kind of, it splits the shot.
Right.
And then as soon as young Thomas sits down, he gets just ass blasted right in his face.
And that's how he is first greeted. There's been no line.
It's a first show of dominance from old Tom.
It's the way he greets the character. So it's kind of an interesting introduction.
Back to him while he's pissing, farting in his face.
Right. And then the first line of dialogue was actually that prayer that he says before every meal.
Oh, when they're at dinner time?
That should pale death with treble dread, whatever.
Yeah, basically like, hey, let's not die. Let's make it 4 weeks, dude. But then we get to where you're talking about the dinner scene. And from there, he wants to get Tom, tries to get Thomas to toast with him, an alcoholic beverage.
Yep.
And we notice that Thomas does not want to toast with an alcoholic beverage. He is not really much of a drinker.
Sober. Yeah. Or sober maybe man. Not sober. Maybe he's just, oh, well, he says it's against the rules.
It's against the rules. Yep. And then we get Tom for, you know, another one of the first shows of dominance in the movie basically says, fuck the rules. Like, I'm the rules.
Right.
Kid.
But yeah, so it's during that meal that old Tom first makes a big deal about the light is his. And young Thomas is like, oh, but the rules say that. And he was like, well, fuck you and fuck the rules. Like, the light's mine. And I feel like young Thomas at that time is kind of like, okay, whatever. Like, he's not really that upset about it yet, but he's kind of like, okay, this might suck.
And I think, because he's already put in some of the work. And basically, from what you see in the film to this point, is he's doing all the work.
He has to do, like, the bitch work.
He's doing all the grunt work and all the actual hard work while Tom gets to go and tend to the light. Which seems like a pretty cushy job. Like
you just sit there and like masturbate.
He doesn't do shit. Yeah. He just like disrobes and like feels the warmth of the light caress all over his bony Green Goblin body.
Green Goblin. Yeah. He's like forever that guy to me too.
Well, you're getting blasted by foghorns all the time. I wonder if they ever locked eyes too while he was like in the lighthouse jerking it. And then Thomas is in the cistern jerking it.
Oh yeah.
And they ever like locked out. I know it almost happened, but it seemed like the timing was always off. But that's another weird thing too, where they're always like whacking off at the same time.
I didn't notice that at all.
At least like the one time they are.
Interesting. Well, that's also probably the times that they're away from each other. Like,
right? So like all the time.
Because
they're just feverishly masturbating.
It's like, what do you do? You're just stuck in there all day.
These guys would have been much better suited to sit at home and watch porn than to be wikis.
What is wiki, like a real thing? I've never heard that before.
I don't know. It sounds funny.
It does
I think
sound
it
funny.
Is.
I mean, it must be.
I think it is, but yeah, I don't know much about Lighthouse. And
so, I mean, so what's crazy to me is like, you know, I don't know how much you want to get into the first like 30 to 40 minutes really, but the first like half an hour, I feel like, of the film is mainly just us realizing, like, okay, old Tom is obsessed with the lamp. He won't let young Thomas go. They have a mutual disdain for one another. And they're ready to get the fuck out of here. Both of them. And it's literally the first 40 minutes cover 4 weeks. The rest of the film is what happens after that 4 week spot. So one of the things I noticed, first of all, he makes a comment about that light up there being St. Elmo's fire. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with what that is?
Not really, to be honest.
I wasn't either. I looked it up.
I know,
mean,
it's like
a
movie or
yeah,
something, right? Yeah, with like Rob Lowe or some
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But it's not that. So I looked it up because I was curious. St. Elmo was the patron saint of sailors, first of all.
Okay.
Second of all, it's a phenomenon that would actually warn sailors of an impending lightning strike. So it was created by a corona discharge, which was,
uh-oh.
I was like, it's coronavirus? But
sick.
Not that. So it's a rod-like object in an atmospheric electric field will emit a blue or violet glow around the object that's accompanied by hissing and a buzzing sound. So it's kind of like any even like sci-fi movies you see where they're trying to have like an electric thing and it turns like blue and purple. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's St. Elmo's fire, that like glow. But apparently it's a real thing that happens. And sailors would use it to warn of a further strike. So what I'm saying is he mentions this. He says that that's what that lamp is said to be. It's like it's said that it's actually St. Elmo's fire up there. And it's kind of foreshadowing because it warns about a future lightning strike.
The coming tempest of dead seagulls.
That and that foghorn sound, that was constantly, really haunting.
Constantly. From the very beginning of the movie until the end, you hear the fucking foghorn. But I think it's by design. Obviously, everything in this movie is by design.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it goes in addition to the aspect ratio in the black and white, where it's meant to not only suck you in to whatever is happening in the movie, but it's meant to make you feel kind of uneasy too, or like claustrophobic, I think. Right. And that constant foghorn is just like there's a scene in the movie where when he's working the furnace and he's just fucking had it with the foghorn and he loses his shit.
Yeah.
Thomas, I'm talking about.
Young Thomas.
I'm just going to keep saying his name like that, dude. Thomas.
Thomas.
Sick of your goddamn fart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first half of the movie, yeah, is basically just him doing all the hard work. Old Tom not doing shit, except treating him like a piece of shit. Now, there's also some other stuff, too. So he finds Thomas in his bedding. There's like a little mermaid idol.
Right, the little figurine.
It comes up through the charm, and it comes up throughout the rest of the movie. And that's another theme, because we also get to a point where there starts to be these like almost dream sequences, or at first they seem like dream sequences, and then they start to get more and more wild to where it kind of pushes the boundaries of if they're actually happening or if they're like some sort of illusion. And the first one I believe we see is one of the nights Thomas goes out to shore and he sees a bunch of logs kind of floating in the water. And then as the logs clear, he goes down closer to the water and he sees a dead body and he freaks out. And then it shows some sort of mermaid under the water. But then it really like does that like horrific, nasty fucking screech.
Yeah, I took it as him like walking towards it, and then suddenly he's like sunk, and then that mermaid comes up like screaming at him, but then he wakes up with like the drops on his forehead.
Ah, yeah, as they do, mermaids, and they're screeching.
Mm-hmm. Sirens.
The sirens, which is another mythological symbol in the film. There's quite a few of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the whole movie is supposedly based on, what's his name? Starts with a P.
Well, there's two of them from what I read and what I kind of understood. And the one I kind of understood already was the Prometheus aspect.
Yeah.
With the flame. And basically Prometheus was a god, I believe, that stole the flame from Mount Olympus and brought it to like villages of the people.
Okay.
I believe. And then there's also Proteus.
Proteus.
Which is an unrelated, he was the messenger, I think, of Neptune or Poseidon or whatever they call that guy, like the god of the sea.
I think Neptune and Poseidon, aren't those the same? Like,
I think it's the same
Greek.
I think it's the same person. Yep.
Yeah.
In Roman
mythology. Yeah. And they have like different names.
But Proteus is, from the research I did, he's like a changeling. And he's like the messenger of the sea and like a guardian he's like a guardian of knowledge and a messenger of the sea and like a changeling. And it really makes sense. He's like he's also has like tentacles and he's kind of like a tentacled beast sea creature, which makes a lot of sense later on.
Right.
With some of the scenes that happen, in my theory that Tom is Proteus.
Old Tom.
Mm hmm. And I think young Thomas is like the, I think he's just meant to live his life in a Promethean cycle.
Okay.
Is kind of what I think.
Okay. Well, we'll get back to that when we.
Yeah, we'll save that for later because that's really jumping far ahead. But it kind of has to happen a little bit now, because then this is kind of where the movie starts going off the rails.
old Tom makes a comment that killing a seabird is bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
So that ends up coming up. And then actually 30 minutes into the film is when young Thomas says his name is actually Ephraim Winslow. So up until this point, we don't know either of their names. There's no introduction to either of them.
Right. And that's why we've been so weird with the names.
Yeah.
Because it's like, how do you even explain this movie? It's not meant to be explained, really.
It's really not. Like, it's, well, and I even looked it up too, and it sounds like you did too. And he was kind of like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it was kind of one of those movies that they're like, it's left to your interpretation. So yeah, so 30 minutes in, the young guy says his name is Ephraim Winslow. And the way he says it is, he's like, look, I don't want you to be calling me boy or whatever he was being called before.
Yeah, it's dog.
Like, well, yeah. And then that, him calling him a dog, follows throughout the movie. Because he said that his boss, when he was in the lumberyard, also called him a dog. Remember?
Yeah, he used to talk a lot of shit to him, call him dog and stuff like that. Talk down to him. He doesn't like being talked down to.
But that word specifically, dog.
Yeah.
Is interesting.
I think it has to do the being lesser than, and I think that's why like a lot of the grunt work eventually gets to him.
Yeah.
Because he eventually all he wants to do is see the fucking light, man.
Yeah.
Like the book says, divvy out the duties.
And
dude,
it's just been built up so much that he's like, why can't I go up there? There was some really good shots too, where the camera looks up at the bottom of the floor that leads up to the light. So it's like, even as the viewer, you can't see it.
And I like those shots too, where it, because of the aspect ratio too, it just fits it so perfectly to start from the bottom with like the furnace area, and then the camera just works its way up to like a heavenly area, you know, from the ground up, seeing where like the grunts work all the way to where the boss plays.
Right. Kind of thing. Yeah. And there's even some shots that are like coming from above down to Ephraim or whoever, whatever you want to call him. Just like something is looking down on him.
Yeah, there's a lot of that as well.
We get to this point where, all right, we know it's bad luck to kill a seagull. We now know a little bit more about this character, and they've kind of started to build a little rapport. They like learn a little bit about each other. So Ephraim says like, oh yeah, I guess I used to work in a lumber yard. And the old guy's like, what are you doing here? Like, you're pretty as a picture. Like, what are you doing here? And they kind of start to actually have a little bit of mutual respect for each other and share more personal details. We find out that the old guy was married at some point, had kids, but now he's married to the light.
He was totally not enthused by those kids at all.
No, yeah.
Or his wife. Whatever he saw in the light was like 100 times better than that family.
Well, yeah. I mean, can you blame them? No, I'm just kidding.
Obviously, yeah. Especially back then, it's like, you know, they probably won't live to be like 14, so
yeah.
Who cares if I spend 13 years out to sea?
Yeah. That is when things start to really turn. So it's like the last day that Ephraim even has to be there. And then he goes to get water out of the spout, and it comes out this like nasty sludge.
Yeah, that was disgusting.
It was gross.
Yeah.
And then he goes out to the well, wherever it's pumping from, and there's a dead seagull already. Actually, I don't think it was fully dead. I think it was kind of like suffering in there.
Yeah, it was like caulking.
Yeah.
Being all fucking dying. Nasty. And that's another one too, where the black and white really plays up how like disgusting that is. Like the color would obviously bring a whole other level to it, but the black and white, it really makes it that like
grimy,
that sludgy black.
Yeah,
where you know it's just fucking bad news.
And then he starts to get attacked by another seagull. It's like the other seagull already thought that he had hurt the seagull that was in the well or something.
Yeah, the one-eyed seagull.
Yeah, I didn't notice it was one-eyed.
Oh yeah, that's a big thing. We'll get into that later. Yeah, it all because it messes with him a little bit earlier too when he's doing one of his coal runs. It like gets it right in front of him and just kind of sits there and fucking bark, like barks at him.
And that was a one-eyed seagull too.
That was the same one-eyed seagull.
I didn't
taunting
even notice
him.
That. Okay. So that's the one that he like threw a piece of coal at or something, and old Thomas saw him.
Yep. And then that's the same one, yeah, that was taunting him, and then he grabs it and he like fucking beats the shit out of it.
Just like a till it's a bloody pulp. Like it's a mess.
It's so visceral and ridiculous, but like it's funny as fuck.
But you can see that he's like taking out this frustration that he's just like, I've fucking had it with this place.
Well, and there's so many things too with him that you can speculate upon. And there's just all these things that you even know or find out later that this guy's built, like just kind of bottling up.
Yep.
Because he goes from new situation to new situation and nothing works out. So it's just this constant array of like not getting to know anybody and not having an outlet to like really let go of some of these issues that he has.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, the issue with a frame or maybe some pent up sexual frustrations that
maybe probably both
pop up later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Just going nuts being on this island.
Because now a seagull's taunting him. You know, yeah. There's that too, where it's like this fucking little rickety old man with a bum leg.
Yeah.
Talks all this shit when he's, you know, on the work field, but then he gives him a little bit of like me time at dinner time and it kind of gets in his head. It's friendly. But then when it's work time, it's like this complete 180 switch that gets flipped.
Right. Exactly.
And it's frustrating. I think it's just too much. And yeah, he fucking murders the shit out of that
seagull. That was a pivotal turning point in the film. So that's where he just snaps. We can tell that he's just fucking lost it. But right after that, they show the, what's that thing called that moves with the wind?
It's the little thing with the little rooster on it.
The rooster thing. Yeah, there's a name for that thing.
The windcock.
The windcock, you know. Yep. we're ridiculous. There's like an obvious name for that. I just don't know what it is.
I think we're close.
Yeah, it's probably windcock. Anyway,
sure.
So that thing goes from like blowing west pretty steadily to just boom, facing north. And then it's like hard. It's not moving. And it's almost eerie because it's kind of like when it's facing west, it seemed like it was kind of normal. Like it's kind of shaky a little bit. When it hits north, it's not moving anymore. And it's almost paranormal.
Yeah, it really does let you know that it's the turning point of the movie where things are about to start getting a little
You don't want that windcock to be that still. So it has been 4 weeks. He's on his last day. That's actually the point that we learn that. Right after that wind changes. Because old Tom says something to young Thomas where he's like, all right, so, you know, it's your last day. Do you notice that wind change directions? And Efrain makes a comment where he's like, good, fuck it. He doesn't say that, but he says something like that. And he's like, well, she were a gentle westerly wind, you're cursing. Like, you know, things are not going to go well.
Right, now we're in the calm before the storm.
The calm before the storm. So on the very last night, old Tom finally convinces young Thomas to imbibe. They get fucked up.
Oh, they get fucked up, and he gets him fucked up.
Absolutely.
Like he takes the one nip, right? Like almost like, okay, I've done my time with you. We made it. I'll fucking toast to you, and then old Tom, he pours him, you know, three more shots or two more shots, like immediately after
right.
that, and totally just gets him shit faced immediately.
Yeah, he's like, "We're gonna get fucked up," and they are cheerful, and then they're fighting. Like this is where it starts getting out of control. And actually, it was at this point, is now 46 minutes into the film, that we learn Thomas's name, where he says, "Call me Tom." So I mean, that's halfway through the movie, we learn the second character's name.
Yep, Thomas Wake.
Yeah. And he says, call me Tom. And then the young guy says, to my friend Tom. So now it's like, okay, now they're bonded. Great.
And then, so after the night of pleasantries and drinking and whatnot, Thomas, or Efrain, wakes up. Hung over his shit.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's got a drop of deuce And so he looks for like the bedpans and they are just full of turds.
Yeah.
They're full of brown trout. And he's like, okay, well, obviously I got to go clean these. So he does this thing, and I wonder why he does this, but he walks them out to like the edge of the rocks, right? Which makes sense. Like if you're going to dump, you know, you don't want to dump it too close to where you're living.
Sure.
It smells like shit. But then he dumps it like right into the wind.
Yeah.
And all these turds just come flying back at him, and he has another freak out because, I mean, obviously, like, who wouldn't, you know?
Right.
You get an old Tom's dirty fecal matter all up in your face. Like, no thanks.
Yeah.
And that's one more, you know, one more mentally breaking thing that happens to him.
And that's, well, then that's when he finds the mermaid as he's walking back.
Yeah, and she looks like she's almost dead at first, like, kind of. Another, just another like dead body that he sees first.
Yeah.
If that means anything, that he sees it is dead first and then it comes alive. I don't know. He's just looking for like dead things.
That, yeah. Like she seems dead and then she just starts screeching and laughing maniacally. And it's real creepy.
Yep. And then he loses his shit, as one would when they actually encounter a siren, and he gets all screamy and the audio gets all weird and distorted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that, so it's right after he sees the mermaid, and he runs away shouting that it's a huge storm. And we find out that, yeah, they're at dinner, and we found out that they didn't end up coming for a rain.
The damps got to the provisions.
Right, yeah, so we need to start rationing. So this is really the point where it just gets completely fucked up. Like, even as a viewer, you're kind of like, oh, he made it, it's his last day. But then it's like, oh, no, it's not. Not only is it not his last day, but they're stranded. It could be months until someone's going to come back. And now we have to ration because all of our provisions have gotten damp.
Well, and they don't actually know how long they've been there either.
That's, yep. And that's when they start getting fucky with what reality is and what it isn't. Yep.
Well, because Winslow seems to think that it's only been a few days since they missed the tender,
right.
The tender ship.
So he thinks, and it's been one day.
And Tom tells him it's been weeks.
Yeah.
And judging by Tom's character and the way he acts, like, you're kind of like, fuck all to believe anything he says.
Right.
Because he's just gaslighting him the entire time.
Yeah.
And but then at the same time, they don't lead you to thinking that Ephraim has all his wits about him either, because
right.
He's seeing things all the time, or like he's
right.
You know, having these displays of having his just mind broken, like when he kills the shit out of that seagull.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So now you're kind of like, wait, has it been weeks or has it been a day? And Ephraim Winslow is what am I saying? The young guy is making comments where he's like, oh, you're fucking with me, you're messing with my head. And the older guy's like, no, dude, it's been weeks. And I keep asking you to ration and you're not being reasonable. Like, we need to be conscientious of how long we're going to be here. So now you kind of start wondering what is real, what's not. And they also start to kind of turn on each other. Like, he's mm-hmm. putting a knife in his pocket. Oh, and then
he's getting ready.
He originally said that he broke his leg. And then later he made a comment that it was scurvy. That was the reason that his leg was all fucked up.
Yeah, caught in a lie.
Yeah, and the young Ephraim, is it Ephraim?
Ephraim.
Okay.
Ephraim.
He makes some comment where he's like, well, hang on, I thought you said that you broke it. That's the whole nun story. And old Thomas is like, oh, you must have misheard.
Yeah, it's totally you. Listening wrong.
And so you're kind of like, okay, so he's full of shit. The young guy is kind of nuts. Like, even as a viewer, you don't really know who has their shit together or who doesn't.
No, they really, especially on the first viewing, they really pull you in both directions quite a bit. Because as soon as you start thinking one way, then it really kind of gets you maybe thinking the other way.
Yeah.
Until things get really nutty, and then it's like pretty obvious, at least like surface level again, like what's going on.
Yeah. Like, we're all nuts here.
Yeah, oh yeah. You gotta be a little nuts to make it through this movie and, and oh, like it as much as I did.
And the fact that, so I had already seen this movie before. So when I watched it, for me, it was the second time. I know you always watch the movie twice. I usually only watch it once. But for me, it was the second time. So I actually noticed at this point that Efrain makes a comment when he's drunk. And he says, oh, Winslow, that Kennedy bastard. And he slips and, like, refers to him. And this is way before he's admitted to what he did. So I thought that that was an interesting part.
I noticed that too. I think it's because he wants to say something. Like, he wants somebody to trust that's not connected to his life that he can talk about.
He wants to spill his beans.
Oh, yeah, don't spill your beans.
But I ain't interested.
I fucking love that part.
Well, right before that, when they get in that huge fight and old Tom gets offended that Efrain doesn't like his cooking.
Oh, yes.
And he makes that whole speech about, like, Neptune and, like, damning him.
Hark!
That was my favorite scene.
That's the best. He doesn't fucking blink either.
No, unblinking. Completely.
It's like
unblinking.
A minute something plus of just fucking acting the shit out of that.
And it's beautiful. And the writing is so good. And you're just watching it like, holy shit. And I love right after that, and Efrain's just like, all right, have it your way. I like your cooking. He's just like, all right, fuck it.
Yeah, I guess I do like your lobster.
Yeah, the lobster.
You're fond of me, lobster. I know it.
Yeah.
They have the most, like, husband and wife, like, from the 60s dinner fights.
Yeah.
Because that's what that reminded me of. Like, oh, honey, the meatloaf's fucked.
The way they fight, too, is it's not like a drunk fight. It reminds me of, like, people on psychedelics. Like, their moods are so intensely changing that it doesn't remind me of, like, a drunk fight, even though they're supposed to be drunk. Did you get that impression, or am I just...
I definitely saw the drunk part.
Really?
Especially as it amplified later on, the copious amount, because it does ramp up.
Yeah, I
like,
guess...
quite a bit. Like, because they get to a point where... the drinking is like they run out of alcohol.
Yeah, when they make their the monkey.
Oh,
pump.
That's another one of my favorite scenes when they fucking it's like turpentine and honey is what I looked up what it was.
Well, they show it too in a scene like way before all of this when Efrain goes up and sees the old guy, old Tom, when he's like jerking off in the lay area. And then at first you think it's like cum, and then you're like, is it cum? Because it's a lot.
Yeah, I wasn't sure on that either. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, but then the tentacles like slither away. So you're like, oh, maybe it's like
tentacle juice. Yeah, tentacle goo.
And then later when they get drunk on it, that's what I thought that was.
Like,
yeah.
And then, because it could be like, you know, and then he sees the tentacle, which,
yeah,
again, who knows if that's actually there? Like,
right.
Because my theory about Tom is that he's like some sort of, he's like a guardian of this light in this lighthouse, you know, and what is the light? They do like the drinking and before the monkey pump.
Wait, we skipped lots to get down there. Sorry, but.
Well, they have the big speech and basically says that he basically puts a hit on him and you're not respecting these gulls, the souls of dead sailors.
Yeah.
And you're going down and that's that.
The next scene is where Efrain is trying to steal the key.
And he does say at the end of that speech that his carcass will be left for the souls of dead sailors to peck upon.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Yes.
That's great. That's
Which
crazy.
It also goes even further with what I'm going to say later, my little theory I got.
Interesting. Okay, interesting.
But so back to him trying to get the key to go into the lighthouse.
Right. It's a queer way to wear your shoes. He's so good.
It's amazing. The fact that neither one of these guys got any kind of like Oscar love is stupid.
While we're on the topic of it, what I really loved about this is that I didn't know Robert Pattinson besides the fact that he's in Twilight. I've never even seen Twilight,
sure.
But I know that he's the guy from Twilight, and that's it. That's all I've ever known him as. So I felt like this was a really cool opportunity for him to kind of break out of that typecast, because he really blew me away with his acting.
Oh, for sure.
And
he's
I thought
great
that was
this.
Cool. it's cool to see someone who has kind of been like pigeonholed into a role as like this idiot, good looking guy.
Right.
And then to actually see like, oh, wow, he's really talented. Like, I thought that was very awesome.
And he's amassed quite a few really good films.
That's what I've heard. I don't think I've seen him in anything else. Yeah. He's great. Yeah. So I thought that that was very cool. But yeah, okay, so he wants to steal this key while old Tom is sleeping.
Yep, and he's got his little butter knife.
Yeah.
He's got his little butter knife, and he tries to steal his key, and then...
He considers so when he's, killing he, him.
Yeah, he, like, thinks about it. He goes back to
I think it's like a letter opener. I think it was, like, sharper than a butter knife.
It was definitely, yeah, it was definitely enough to kill. It was, yeah. I mean... I didn't really know because it was like an older kind of metal instrument. I just think they all kind of look like, you know, little shanks.
yeah.
But yeah, he definitely considers killing him.
Yeah.
And then old Tom wakes up.
That he says queer way to wear your shoes because he's not
That's
wearing
right.
his, like barefoot or not barefoot, but he's in socks.
And he's just totally nonchalant about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, dude, you're not going to do shit.
And actually, the young Thomas kind of backs down, too. He's like, oh, sorry, I'm just... What did he say? He makes some comment where he's like, oh, I was just trying to... Didn't want to wake you up or something like that.
Yeah, it's a weird exchange.
Yeah, it's very awkward.
It's super awkward, and it's like, the guy might want to kill you, but you just would rather sit in bed. And I'm pretty sure he farts, too. Again.
Like, just real dismissive.
Yeah.
So after this point, Efrain is regularly drinking. So they show him even like during work, he's got a bottle with him. Like he has really broken the seal.
Oh, he's getting tanked. He's getting so tanked that he's having trouble jerking it in the cistern.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably one of the reasons. But, you know, mentally, this guy's
not doing so hot.
Fried. Like when he's having one of his Jack sessions and he starts thinking about...
Winslow.
He's also having sex with a mermaid.
Yeah.
And then it turns into like, then it's like a scene of him imagining killing Winslow, which is an important distinction from Winslow just having the body amongst the logs because it's a totally different moment in time.
True. Yeah, true.
And it's a weird thing to reflect on instead of just the guy being dead is that he wanted to kill him because you find out that he might have killed him. We don't know, but I don't think he did. I think it was more like he explains that he basically could have saved the guy.
And chose
but he
not
chose not to.
Like he just watched him die. Yeah. So he obviously has some guilt he's like holding on to. And even like when he's jerking off, he's like, he thinks of it and then he tries not to. And then the mermaid is like pulling him underwater.
Yeah. And there's that whole vision. And then there's the other interspliced moments where he's pulling up the crab fishing rig. I believe that's all at the same time.
No, it happens after.
It's right after.
I just know because my notes are just that detailed. But
I knew it was like, it's like right by there, though.
It is. It's right after. So it's like, so he's jerking off and then the mermaid pulls him underwater. He actually finishes. But then falls to his knees and starts sobbing. Or he screeches and then starts sobbing.
Oh, yeah. He's having a fit.
He's having a really bad day. But at least he got off. And then he tries to stab the mermaid figurine. Remember? And he, like, throws it and it breaks.
The key to all of his problems. And then he goes at it, with that little blade.
Yeah, which is not doing shit.
Chopping at it.
It broke in half after he threw it. So it was right after that that he's actually pulling up the lobster cage or whatever it is, and he sees the corpse.
Yeah, the head of the second that old Tom has talked was when he asked him before what happened to his last second, he said basically he was a one-eyed guy, I believe.
He went
and
nuts.
He went nuts and obsessed with the light, and he thought that the light brought salvation, and it ultimately drove him mad.
Right, exactly.
And he died.
Mm-hmm. He was talking about sirens, all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, basically all the same shit that homeboy is going through.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so that's kind of a big revelation.
Which either is like, oh, so there's something to this, or maybe the fact that old Tom said it in the beginning actually influenced.
Could be psychologically influencing his like a projection.
Yeah. Yeah, could so be. We don't know. So it's right after that they get into the drunk fight. They're singing shanties, and then they almost kiss at one point.
Yep, they get their slow, intimate, like, slow dance.
Yeah.
Right after their jig dancing, or whatever you'd call it.
Yep.
Which is another weird thing, too, which leads me to believe that old Tom's even more full of shit, is how can he, dance like that? With that bum leg.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah,
he's like cutting a rug.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Which I don't know if it's like a thing to do with like when he's in friend mode versus boss mode, if there's like a complete like breakdown of like one version of his mind, the leg works, one version it doesn't.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe that's why there's multiple stories. Maybe he isn't just, lying all the time, but he actually can't differentiate the two.
I wrote the timestamps for all of these. It's an hour and 12 minutes in that Efrain actually admits that his name is, in fact, Tommy Howard.
Yes, another weird coincidence.
Yeah, so we realize that the old Tom and young Tommy have the same name, which we'll talk about this, I guess, when we get to the end, but I started wondering if they were the same person.
They're the same fucking guy.
Same fucking guy.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Really? Okay. So
That was, like, the first thing that ran through my mind, but I have a more elaborate twist on that.
Interesting. Okay, we'll get to it. But so then we start realizing, like, okay, there's more to the story here, but we don't know yet who Efrain Winslow is. We just know he's given the wrong name.
We're about to find out,
because that's when old Tom says, "Don't be spilling any of your beans to me, because I ain't interested."
He tells him. But then what does he do? He spills his beans.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that. So his beans end up being the fact that, like we said before, while he was a logger, it was his superior that would call him dog all the time. So he really did hate this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He called him an old Kennedy bastard. So he wasn't a fan.
No, not at all.
But basically, from the way he tells the story, is that there was a log jam. And basically, he could have saved his boss, Efrain. But first of all, he thought he was a fucking asshole, so he didn't want to. But he was like, look, I had nothing going for me, but this guy did. So if I just took his papers, right, I could just become him.
Get a clean slate in a new town with a new name.
So he spills his beans.
He spills his beans, and then we notice Tommy, or not Tommy, old Tom.
Old Tom.
Thomas Wake is gone. Disappeared. Boom. Not in the room anymore. And you just hear his disembodied voice, though, saying, "Why'd you spill your beans, Tommy?"
Yeah.
And he says that over and over again. And now it's getting weird, right?
Now it's getting real weird.
We're into, like, the real thick shit
of
the end, where it starts getting really nutty.
Yeah. Young Tommy is, like, he's had it. He finds a lifeboat, even though it's, like, storming cats and dogs. He tries to take the lifeboat out, and old Tom is just not having it. And he starts attacking it with an axe.
Don't leave me!
Yeah.
Well, before that, too, we get, like, this really interesting shot, too, where it's almost like a really, like, I don't know how meta it's supposed to be, if it actually happens or if it's just something we're supposed to interpret or whatever. But it's Thomas sees Efrain on the ground, and he goes and he touches him, and then Efrain turns around and it's just Thomas. And then old Tom is now naked and towering over him and touches him.
Yeah.
And he looks almost completely different, or more like a true form almost. And he has this gaze of this light that comes from his face and goes right onto young Tom's, and it kind of sets off this
like
whole
a lighthouse.
Crazy. Like the lighthouse.
Right. Yep. That whole part is like, what the fuck is going on?
Then we get the weird, like, almost Shining-esque hobbling with the axe, old Tom, where he fucks up the boat and then tells him not to leave him. And then just all shit goes to hell.
So it's shortly after this that young Tommy accuses old Tom of killing his second. So he's like, I found him in the lobster pot. I know what you did. And old Tom is kind of like, no, he's denying it. And right after that, and you're kind of on young Tommy's side. You're like, oh yeah, you caught him. You fucking killed that guy. But then right after that, young Tommy's like, and you're driving me crazy with that mermaid figurine, but I won. I destroyed it. Now I can't go crazy. And you're like, oh, he's cracked.
And he gives the like little preschooler hand claps at the end when he thinks he's figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, so good.
Yeah, for me at the beginning of that, when he's like, you killed your second, I found him, I was on the same page. And then right when he was like, you're controlling me with that mermaid, but I broke it, I was like, ooh, he's completely gone.
And, you know, what better way to fix the situation than to mix up some of their own alcohol drink
Absolutely.
That we were talking about earlier, the monkey pump.
Well, it's also, I think, a big deal that old Tom tells young Tommy that it's the fact that he spilled his beans is what's now making him crazy.
Yep.
Like, he should have held on to that, because that's what made him just nuts.
Well, there's also a couple things in this movie that he's told not to do, and he expressly does the opposite of what he's told, leading to possibly a certain outcome.
Like the drinking?
Like the end. I think in general. I think we're almost there. We're almost there.
That and then again, they bring up the time thing. I feel like time follows you through the whole thing. So again, old Tom is like, well, how long has it been? Has it been 5 weeks? Has it been 2 days? Am I a figment of your imagination? I probably am.
Well, yeah, like, judging by their facial hair, it hasn't been more than a day.
Yeah.
Which is another important thing, I think.
That's a good point. And there's also the part where young Thomas actually punches a clock, which I thought was like an interesting symbolism. Yeah, so time plays a weird role. I didn't think about the facial hair, though. That's a good point.
Yeah, I think time is a pretty big aspect of what's going on.
Time and identity
isn't really as important as they think, because they don't really understand what's going on.
Yeah, but identity too. Like, a huge thing is, like, we don't know their names, and then the name that we do know is a fake name, and, like, it's all convoluted.
When everybody's questioning what they really know, from the players of the film to the viewer at home, the audience.
Yeah, you really don't know whose side you're even on through the whole thing. You're like, oh, is Efrain, like, a crazed killer? Are they both nuts? Like, we don't know what's happening.
Well, they're both nuts on the monkey pump. Or at least I think it's called Monkey Pump. I don't
they
know.
Call
All I know
monkey
is
pump. Yeah.
I just know when Willem Dafoe drinks it and he beats his chest and he goes crazy, and there's like this long shot from the top of the lighthouse looking down, and he just yells Monkey Pump. No, but they are shit faced so bad that they basically forget to fortify their living quarters, and the incoming tempest just fucks everything up.
Everything is just fucked.
Everything's messed up. They did not do their job of guarding those living quarters properly.
No. Not at all. So this is, I would say, we're pretty much towards the end. They wake
Everything moves pretty quick here from here on out. Yeah.
They wake up all hungover. It's flooded in there. And young Tommy finds the logbook.
Yeah, and he sees that basically old Tom has been basically planning to shit can him like the whole time and make sure that he gets like no severance pay.
Severance without pay, yeah.
And just fuck him. But he uses his like intangible negative qualities against him to fuck him over. Knowing that he worked hard, he used his like character flaws almost to like fuck him over. It was pretty dirty.
Pretty awful.
And every time they show him writing in the book, throughout the movie, he's almost wants to cackle. He's so happy that he's about to fuck this dude's life up.
God, such a dick. Yeah. So, but he makes this comment because he defends what he writes in the book, and then he says to Efrain or whatever, young Tommy, he says, "You lie to yourself, but you ain't have the sauce to see it."
Mm.
So you're kind of like, oh, has he been lying to himself the whole time?
Right.
You question reality again.
For sure. And then we get one of the more epic rants of the whole movie where young Tommy absolutely loses it and he's just had it with him. And he says one of my favorite lines of the whole movie, but he lets loose and he tells him he's sick of all of his shit and he's sick of his goddamn farts.
Yeah.
And he tells him he smells like curdled foreskin and jism and just fucking
he really
hose this
lets
guy
him
out.
Have it.
Yeah. Player haters ball.
Yeah. It's that's when a really interesting part happens too, where young Tommy sees old Tom and he morphs. And he morphs into Winslow, and he morphs into the mermaid. He morphs into the tentacles coming up. And at one point, he has, the conch shells on him, just the way he described.
That's what sold it for me, in my theory.
Okay.
The third time I watched it, when that happened. Because to me, when they start fighting, and he gets him on the ground, and they
You're
start fighting...
me.
And then he turns into the mermaid and it changes. And then he turns into that tentacled creature again.
Yeah.
Which fits the description for the shape-shifting Proteus god-type character that apparently he was the influence. And the nature of him changing on a whim like that leads me to believe that he was doing that throughout the entire movie.
And being the mermaid?
And possibly, or just having the ability to appear that way to fuck with young Tommy, or to maybe get him to react a certain way or do a certain thing.
Huh, okay. Interesting.
And then, he beats the ever-loving shit out of him.
Yeah, you're killing me.
And now he finally can assert his power over the old Tom.
And how does he do that? But by making him literally act like a dog.
Yep, it gets him a dog collar and everything.
Yeah.
He stands over him and tells him to bark like a dog.
Yeah.
Bark.
He gets into it.
Oh, it's funny too, because he does act like a little ass dog, just kind of laying there on the ground. And then he makes him, what does he tell him? Roll over.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting, that it's the logger called him a dog. And before he told the story of the logger, already old Tom was calling him dog.
Yeah, he knew already.
Yeah, which made me think, oh, okay, so this guy is a figment of his imagination. So he walks old Tom out as a dog.
Yes.
And goes to bury him alive.
And then we get another great scene.
He'll be punished.
Old Tom getting buried legit.
Yeah.
Taking shovels of dirt to the face while he's giving this
mouth.
And he's given this speech to young Tommy about how basically he's going to fucking reap what he's sowing.
Yeah.
By what he's doing to him.
Yeah.
And then that's basically it for that. It looks like he's dead, but then right before he dies, he does say he'll be punished in a Promethean way, which he already said before with the seagulls, where he said that basically the souls of the dead sailors, the seagulls will pick at his intestines.
Mm-hmm.
And that if that's the whole Promethean thing. So just another kind of omen of what's going to happen.
Right. He reaches in and grabs the keys.
Yeah, and it looks like he might try to save him for a second or have a change of heart, because he kind of frantically goes to grab him. And then he's like, no, I'm just grabbing the fucking keys.
Yeah, I thought that he just forgot that they were in there. And then he was like, oh, shit, I have to grab those. Yeah. So old Tom passes out. Young Tommy grabs the keys and runs inside. But old Tom comes after him.
Yeah, he's going to grab a smoke.
Yeah, it looked like. He's exhausted.
Yeah, and he's like, this guy's holding all the smokes. I'm going to fucking smoke one of these.
Yeah. So old Tom comes back. He slashes him with an axe.
Yeah, it gets him right in the shoulder.
Ugh. So young Tommy finally full-on murders old Tom with one heavy blow with the axe.
Yeah, right to the head real quick. Just yeah. Dunzo.
And then he smokes and repeats that dinner prayer.
Well, Andy, yeah, he smokes that cigarette like he just got done having sex.
Yeah.
He's like, well, oh, he's finally fucking dead. I'm going to smoke
this cigarette.
It's been
a long month for this guy, though.
Yeah, this month, 2 months, six months.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Lifetime? Like, this guy's had a tough time. So now he's weak, he's injured, he's tired, and he crawls up that spiral staircase because he'll be damned if he's not going to get up there, and finally opens the latch. And you feel this, like, relief with him that he's able to do that.
Well, yeah, and it happens so easily too with that
finally.
Key. It's like as soon as you get the key, you have the power. It just basically opens itself to you.
It literally, well,
and then
it
does. Yeah, yeah. when he gets up there, yeah, it stops turning and opens its doors, and then we see the scene from the perspective of inside the light in this fucking just covered in blood.
Yeah,
Thomas
face.
Howard, and he. Looks in the light, and then he grabs the light, and I want to say he starts off like laughing hysterically.
Yeah,
like happy,
and
but
screaming.
Like,
it's
but
like
it's well, it feels like it starts as like a laughter, and then it gets like really intense, and it gets like really distorted and
I wrote that it
screamy.
Was like orgasmic. Like it seemed like he was like screaming but laughing and like kind of going insane
all over the place. Yeah, and very distorted too. It's
yeah.
Like, and it becomes too much for him, and he I don't know if it's just if it throws him out, or if it, you know, like if we're going with the surface level interpretation again, maybe it was just too hot after a while.
Yeah,
and he fucking or he was rejected at that point. The light
maybe.
Rejected him.
Maybe
for him to fall down all the stairs, all the way from the top,
a
all the way to the bottom.
Spiral staircase too, to fall all the way down a spiral staircase. That's
well, and
the easy.
Break here, Andy. I'm pretty sure he snapped both of his ankles on the way down too. Like when he fell down the first like little ladder, you could hear like a snap, and it's like, oh yeah. That fucking sucks.
Yeah. And then we get to the very last scene, which, as you brought up, it was foreshadowed that I didn't even pick up on that. But we see young Tommy is naked on the shore. The seagulls are eating his intestines.
Yeah, the seagulls are nipping at his innards.
Nipping his innards. And the camera is like slowly panning away and letting you really just take in this whole scene. It's very slow and creepy. You got the sound of the screaming gulls all over the place. And
well, and then it really, like, as soon as that happens, like, you really start to think. That's when, at least for me, it really started to be like, okay, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, because it's like, how did he even get there? Like,
exactly. And yeah. and his eye is missing.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
The same
like
eye,
the one-eyed seagull,
same exact eye as the one-eyed seagull. Leading me to believe, now here's my batshit crazy theory.
Okay.
That he was actually the second that died.
Oh, okay.
And his story holds up, but he's in purgatory of sorts, seeking the light, seeking salvation of what he thought before. But every time I think he's reliving this moment, like Prometheus relived his moment every day. So I think he's reliving this until he can come to terms with what he did and maybe
was killing Winslow,
to come to terms. Yeah. With the murder and all that shit and repent fully for that before he can maybe move on or be accepted by the light. But every time he fucks up and he's rejected by the light. And
wow.
I think old Tom, I think the double names Tom is a thing too, where maybe he's just like a manifestation that is like, you know, in his head. But then I really think it does play with the Proteus aspect of it, where he's the all-knowing kind of messenger of the sea that shapeshifts and tries to get him on a path to not make those same mistakes. But when he kills that seagull, like, he does not show any remorse or care for that seagull's life at all, just leading into like, well, you already killed before, you just killed again. And
but also
now,
the seagull is one-eyed just like he is at the end,
right? So it's a, it's kind
so
of
it's
a
like
signal
he's
that he's killing
himself.
He's killing himself, and yeah. And that's kind of when all the shit starts. And then you get to the other moment with the whole Hark thing, and he and old Tom basically tells him how he's gonna die. It's like he knows how that's gonna play out. Mm-hmm. And he's telling him because it's basically going to happen again. This is why I think in the beginning, when he doesn't drink, I think he's done this before and he's drank.
Okay.
And it's him every time he goes through. I think he is learning maybe different things not to do. That's the impression I got. Is
that's
that
interesting.
He's
yeah.
not all the way through his journey yet. And every time he gets to the light, he's rejected.
Yeah, I could see that about the rejecting. That's interesting.
Or it's just a story about how hierarchies are bullshit and we should all revolt against our boss.
Yeah.
Because that's the other take I got from it that was great.
The thing that I thought was interesting, too, is so this is way more well-formed than my theories. My theory was like, I don't know what happened. But I did think it was interesting that at one point, young Tommy makes a comment to old Tom where he's like, you know, your character is, it's like a caricature of a seafarer. Like it's, you're not a real person. You've never been at sea at all. It's almost like you're acting like a cartoon of someone who would be a wiki. What the fuck even is a wiki? I don't know. Maybe that's probably a real thing. but that got me thinking. So it's like, oh, he's always lying. Maybe he is a figment of this guy's imagination.
Right.
Like maybe he is. It's like the way his imagination would make up this character.
Right. Or he's just another half of his consciousness, like a subconscious something like that.
Exactly. Because but that one-eyed thing is really, there's definitely something to that. Because I didn't even notice that, but that's very interesting.
Yeah. By the time I got to the third watch, like there's themes. And like the other thing too, is with this movie, from the sound design to the aspect ratio to the acting to every shot being very specific,
mm-hmm.
it does what a lot of movies, for me at least, have a hard time doing of like sucking me in completely.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was, and the writing, oh my God.
Well, and it feels like if you were to imagine what it would look like to be a quote unquote wiki or whatever, or to be around a lighthouse and to be around these storms and to like live in those conditions, like this movie really makes it feel like the authentic, like true article. Like it's like the real deal.
Absolutely. Even with how dramatic Willem Dafoe's character is, you buy it. Like even though it's ridiculous. In fact, if it was anyone else playing that role, I don't think I would buy it. I think he just nailed it so well. Everything is intentional, like you were saying, like every little thing. And I'm sure we missed, I mean, I'm sure we're like at the tip of the iceberg, you know. This is one of the few movies that I think I would actually be interested in watching. You know how sometimes like in movies they have like the directors narrating like over
you get a commentary track
the
on
commentary
the movie, yeah.
I would totally watch that for this.
I agree, that'd be
a
good one.
Really interesting to hear. And then when I did look it up, I didn't look it up a whole lot, but I did see some notes about Willem Dafoe's like acting style versus Robert Pattinson. And I mean, those two guys, they both, I don't think one stole the show from the other one. And I thought that was a really good balance between the two of them.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And it also, like, to have a movie where there's basically the two characters, and the only other person with any kind of role really is, you see the dead body of the one guy and the mermaid.
And at the very beginning, there's like a bunch of extras in the very first scene. But
other than that, yeah, it's very two character centric and it works. And like you said, not one really doesn't overpower the other, because in the moments where like old Tom steals the show in the beginning, young Tom really steals the show kind of towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah. They both are just really rich characters that they have a history and we learn their history, but then we don't even know how much of it is real and what isn't. So that it's very interesting. I just thought this entire movie was fantastic. Well, I mean, well, okay. What was your favorite scene? Did you write that down?
Oh, I did, but I wrote down like four of them.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, the de facto number one answer I think that most people is going to give is going to be the monologue scene.
Which one?
With the Hark.
Yeah.
And he, that you was know, mine. And old Thomas is telling young Tommy that he's going
to
get
I
fucked
want
up.
To memorize that monologue. It's so good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But other than that, then some of the more, the funnier parts is probably like my favorite scenes is probably the monkey pump scene.
Yeah.
Just that shot. Or honestly, the scene where you, right before the chase at the end, where he, young Tommy sees Ephraim, touches him, sees himself, and then old Tom is like the god standing over him. That was really cool too. But really, it's hard to choose. This movie is just filled with amazing scene after amazing scene.
The first scene that I wrote down was the one where old Tom was like changing out like to different characters, because I just thought that was a really interesting scene, especially all the tentacles.
That one's really cool.
Yeah, I thought that part was cool. But that whole monologue about Neptune, I thought was just fucking metal as fuck.
Yeah, it's too good.
It's so good. So what did you rate it? I'm interested to hear.
You know, I have a hard time with rating scales because I don't like to just like jump out and give something the highest score right away.
Me neither. Yeah, and we've been doing it out of 5, which is maybe we should be doing them out of 10. Make it a little easier.
No, I mean, I think 5's good. At least for now. Maybe we'll get to ratings like breakers later. Scale breakers.
Yeah.
This one's close, yeah. But it might need a revision later, but I can't give it a 5.
Yeah. Yet.
So it's got to be 4.5 one-eyed seagulls.
Oh, okay. Good. I gave it 4 out of 5 mermaid figurines.
Hey.
Which, when I look at it, does seem like a kind of a harsh rating. Now that I look back on it, I'm like, really? 4 out of 5? But, yeah.
Not really. I mean, because it's also like, I mean, at least for me, like, I could sit here and go back and forth about the rating.
Yeah.
About this movie. But at the end of the day, it's a 5 in my heart.
It's beautiful, but it's not perfect.
No, that's the thing is with 5s, it's like, not very many.
Yeah.
And you know what'll be funny is some of the ones that I do give 5s to, people are going to be like, you suck.
It's like, really? But, the Lego movie? And you're like, yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, Chris Pratt? He's so fucking cool, dude.
I thought it was a deliciously surreal nautical nightmare. I came up with that, and then I saw someone else said it, which of course they did, because it's pretty easy.
I was going to say that sounds like something that would be on the box.
Yeah, I know.
Be like, Sir Jones says,
deliciously surreal nautical nightmare. The nautical nightmare. And then I looked it up, and I saw that on another caption, and I was like, they copied me, which obviously they did not. But yeah, I thought it was great. 4 out of 5.
Definitely the best movie we've seen, I think.
Oh yeah,
in my opinion,
it's like what Lou's wishes it was.
Right, good first attempt on Lou's behalf.
Oh, totally.
But like this is like the masterclass version,
of course. Yeah,
of that.
So we were talking a little bit earlier this week.
Well, and this was the guy's second film too.
That's
by the way, like, we didn't really talk about him much. Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit earlier this week. His debut film was The Witch.
It's another dope-ass movie.
Another fucking fantastic movie, which I rewatched after watching The Lighthouse again. So I'd seen both of them already once, but it had been a long time since I'd seen either of these films. And after watching The Lighthouse, actually that same day, I didn't do shit this day.
That's sick. That's dope.
But that same day, I watched The Witch. And the two films are so different. You would have no idea it was the same guy, Robert Eggers.
There's like the subtleties that he uses are definitely familiar between the two, to like the more open to interpretation style. But yeah, like those are two totally different looking and sounding movies.
Yeah. Well, and obviously they're both like kind of interesting, like fairy tale type bents.
Yeah.
But other than that, they are very, very different films. Wouldst Thou Like to Live Deliciously? Black Phillip.
That fucking goat.
Oh, what a great dick. Movie. Really great movie. But yeah, I mean, he's another guy who anything that he comes out with, I'm on it, like white on rice. So my choice for next week was a movie I haven't seen. It's called A Field in England.
Interesting.
Have you seen it?
No.
So it's kind of similar to The Lighthouse, actually. It's also in black and white.
Okay.
But it's going to use up your whole screen. And The Guardian, this is my favorite review about it. The Guardian calls it a grisly slice of psychedelia.
Okay.
So it's basically black and white film, great actors that you'll recognize. And I think they just like trip balls on mushrooms. But it's like a awesome. It's like a horror, psychedelic horror film. Is all I can get from the trailer.
Cool. I'm down for that.
Yeah,
I like horror.
Really interesting.
I like tripping, so.
Yeah, me too. So, seems right up our alley. What was yours?
All right, well, mine, I did a little sneaky move earlier because I couldn't think of what to do, so I actually made my own Twitter poll. On my own Twitter.
I made my own movie.
I made my own movie to review in one day.
What do you guys think of this?
But I did a Twitter poll, and I picked between Psycho Goreman, which was one I really wanted to choose, which is a newer
really
movie.
Mm-hmm.
Chud for an old funsy.
Classic.
And Hellraiser was
another
third one.
Classic. That's
which
like
is another classic
favorites.
That I also love.
Well, Hellraiser 2 is where it's at, really.
I love Hellraiser 2.
Me too.
But so Hellraiser 1.
Classic.
So my choice is about a guy who gets a little puzzle box and basically fucks his whole world up.
Yep.
And then there's a bunch of flesh-devouring torture beasts that are unleashed with the box. And without getting too far into it, that's basically Hellraiser.
If you haven't seen Hellraiser,
then
whether or not...
You.
We, yeah, fuck you. Turn the show off. Never listen to it again.
We're at the end anyway. Maybe listen next week if you've all vote for Hellraiser,
yeah.
Which you should all... And so those are our picks, and what we need you guys to do is the listeners to go to our social media on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, all three. We are at TJ Watch Movies. That's TJ Watch Movies. And you can go there and vote in our poll about which movie we will review and watch next week between Hellraiser and what's the other one?
A Field in England.
A Field in England.
Yeah.
And once again, thank you guys for listening. I am Tub.
And I'm Sarah. Oh, fuck. No, I'm Jonesy.
Catch you guys on the flip side.
Yeah, get out there and vote. Thank you
vote.
For listening.
Vote.
Bye.
See ya.